doing that Commodore show for so long? Or
it's a great time.
Yeah. It must be fun. It must be a sort of a no pressure kind of gig.
It's a, yeah, it's like a party or a picnic.
Yeah.
The only thing missing is the open sky. You know, it's like that. It should be outside in a picnic environment, but it's fine.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that was our when we started out, that was our first and only goal, was to play the Commodore.
Yeah.
Because we'd seen The Clash there, you know, Blondie and Talking Heads and all those bands from those days. They all started out at the Commodore. It's like, if only we could play there. So we finally got that opportunity backing up Shriekback.
Remember Shriekback? Yeah.
That was our first time playing there. And then, you know, I think we backed up DOA for one of their benefits there after that, and just sort of, you know, did about four or five backup slots, and then all of a sudden we were doing our own show.
Yeah, in Toronto, it's either the Phoenix or Massey Hall, you know.
Yeah.
That's
it was the Diamond.
Yeah, the Diamond.
That's where we started in Toronto. Yeah.
In fact, we had the Toronto Independent Music Awards recently, and Jim Zeppa, who was running it when it was the Diamond Club, and, you know, was really in charge of managing all of the acts that went through there. I mean, he was, you know, just going on and on about, you know, just, yeah, I mean, in its day, it was a pretty cool place, and now it's got a little more competition.
Yeah.
How did you like Lee's Palace?
It's okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's fine. It's got a nice history to it, but it's not our history.
You know? Right, exactly.
So we kind of just went in there, whatever, we did a multiple night stand a couple of times.
Yeah.
Went in there just to sort of, get some of that Toronto, you know, beer on the walls kind of vibe.
Yeah, that's right. The green room smells like any other green room.
Yeah.
How are the levels? Everything's good?
Yeah, everything's great.
I'm just screwing around. How about... Actually, we'll... Okay, great.
Let's move this slightly so we don't have to worry about your foot.
Okay.
No, it sounds great.
Yeah, can I get an audio drop from you? Can I have you say, this is Neil Osborne with 5440, and you're listening to IndieCan Radio.
Okay. This is Neil Osborne from 5440, and you're listening to IndieCan Radio.
Terrific, thanks.
Mm-hmm.
Neil, thanks for coming on the show. I was looking forward to interviewing you. Can we, let's see, there's so much we can cover, so little time. Talk a little bit about the band now. And what, for instance, Brad, your bass player, described Say Yes to Everything as the first album of the second half of 5440's career. Do you feel the same way about that?
I understand where he's coming from. We have Dave Ginn in the band now. He replaced Phil Comparelli. So, we did. That was the first original record where Dave was a contributor, you know. And, yeah, I would say it's a symbolic in the sense that we're not so much into careering, although that's important. It's more into creating, you know. So we're comfortable as artists just with the creative process. We're fortunate enough to be able to continue making a living. So it's more we can explore what we're doing creatively. You ask what we're doing now. We're actually, we got an ambitious project right now, and it's to record 100 songs and write and record them. And that is going to be our next album, is 100 songs. I don't know how technologically it's going to be released, but it's not my problem. Probably internet.
100 songs.
100 songs.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Any idea what the price structure is going to be? Or
No, no. You know, I don't know. It's, you know, I did a record for a band called Jets Overhead.
Yeah.
And for the longest time, they just gave it away on the internet.
Yeah.
And it helped. You know, it helped create a buzz and stuff like that. Music that you create, it's content, it's something, you know, there's if you talk in the world of computers, internet, there's the content providers, and then there's the sort of everybody else that provides service, or people who grab the content or whatever, or advertise. So, I look at it as like, if you've got content, if you've got something, to put in there, then, you're doing all right. And the whole dynamic's changed. It's not so much about cash. It's more about attention and energy, which does get translated into cash if that's the direction you want to go.
But it has a commercial value.
Yeah. But cash is just a symbol for, you know, a current And a current is a kind of energy. So you just bypass the whole cache. And if you get the energy, in other words, i.e. attention, gravitated towards you, you know, you've kind of got your real estate without ever having to lay out cash. I know it's weird to comprehend that way, but that's what it is.
It's more West Coast than what we're used to, but it's pretty cool.
There is a way to spin it back into some cash. Trust me, I haven't figured it out, but other people have.
Now, with 100 songs, how many videos do you think you're going to be working on there?
Well, I think, I don't know. I mean, once again, I just bought the Beck record online. I don't know if you know, are familiar with it, but I think it's called Information or something. Anyways, it was like $11.99, and you get 18 songs that include some remixes and 11 videos all in that package. And the videos are great. They're just, you know, in front of a wall, like a blue screen, and some guy, you know, rapper guy chilling down behind him dancing, and yeah. You know, next song is a different guy in a different costume, you know.
And so they're all very low budget type
very low
videos.
Budget, yeah, and they're just for online only kind of thing. And I still think that's the way to go too. So if we do a video, it'll be something like that, I think.
There's an indie band in Toronto called Tin Bangs, and they've got a little video on their MySpace, and it's just a sock puppet singing the song. That's all it is. But if you need visual, you know, there it is.
Yeah, exactly.
Now, what's different about this millennium? I mean, your career started in the 80s, and, you know, I remember what was going on there, but do you go about music differently? Do you have to think, you know, things aren't like they were? What's different now for you as an artist, other than the fact that you've got some street credibility that you might not have when you were thinking about putting out your first record?
I don't know. I mean, I think you try to hang on to what's the same rather than really worry about what's different. I mean, what's different is all external kind of stuff. What's the same is the way the music works on you or the listener or whatever. You know, if you like an old, I don't know, a Joy Division song or whatever, or even a Creedence song or whatever it is, there's something that still rings true for you. Depending on how you grew up and what music you listen to, it's part of your background. And then being in a band, you know, playing live, getting that rush, getting that connection, being present in that connection is consistent.
Right. That's no different.
Yeah. And that's what you have.
Yeah.
All the other stuff, I mean, tons of things have changed. It depends what area you want to talk about. I mean, it's an encyclopedia of options, you know, in terms of recording, in terms of sound quality, in terms of the business, you know, in terms of the actual medium that it's on. So it's done, you know, we started out, did an indie, you know, vinyl release, and then we got signed to Warner Brothers, and we did a record, our first record for them. And then the second record, you know, was like, good news, they're going to do a limited run of CDs, you know. Zoom to the 90s, we're on Sony, you know, and we begged them to do a limited vinyl release. And
right.
They said it cost too much and they wouldn't do it.
They wouldn't do it.
You know, so like, what happened there? So there you go.
But now you could sell them over the internet. You could do vinyl and
yeah, no, you could
have your own store off your website and anyone who wanted it.
There's a whole boutique vibe in vinyl, right?
Yeah.
And people release magazines and fanzines of what's out on vinyl. And instantly that gets a little credibility with some people. And I got to say, you know, I went to a friend's house a couple years ago and we did the AB, you know, and he had one of those old $2,000, you know, turntables, you know, those era of those guys, the whole hi-fi nuts. You know?
Yeah, that's right. The audiophile of the day.
Yeah, and his record's like, don't even look at my record kind of thing, you know, with no scratches and the diamond needle.
Yeah, I won't play it for you because it's in mint condition.
Yeah, and we'd listen to whatever it would be, Let It Bleed or even Crisis, What Crisis by Supertramp, you know, and CD versus the vinyl, and the vinyl won every time. It's just warmer, just connected so much better. It's an analog medium, right?
Yeah, and it may make a retro comeback or a huge comeback, who knows?
Yeah, well, it has its place. And of course, the whole DJ thing has kept the turntable going. So,
Yeah, I can't see a lot of 5440 tunes getting spun at the dance clubs.
No, although Matt, our drummer, is a DJ.
Yeah, cool. Yeah, yeah.
Does the mod club out in Victoria and in Vancouver.
Oh, that's excellent.
Yeah.
So that must be a huge influence for him in terms of what he brings to the band.
What must be? Just being a DJ?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Just the other music he's being exposed to.
Yeah, he's got he's a drummer, so, you know, and then doing a DJ, which is, you know, getting people to dance. It's all rhythmic, right?
Yeah.
And he brings that sensibility. It doesn't necessarily, he's not particular about, you know, production or style. It doesn't have to sound like the latest, greatest scratch or whatever. It's just got to work rhythmically.
Yeah.
Which I believe is, you know, sometimes I say it's 98% of music is rhythm. I mean, it's the rhythm how you say the words. It's the rhythm how the melody is delivered. It's the rhythm of every instrument, you know, how that works in a real-time sense.
Do you think about or obsess about or care about who's listening to your music? Are you fanatical about, you know, if songs aren't being spun, why aren't they being spun? Or what's the demographic of the 5440 fan?
Okay. I don't know. I mean, we did a show last night. I mean, and it was, excuse me there, my phone telling me things. We did a show last night in Vancouver here at the Commodore, sold out show, and the first, whatever, front rows of people there, I didn't even think they were old enough to have their license.
Yeah.
And it shocked the heck out of me. I didn't, you know, wow, what are they doing here? You know, shouldn't they be listening to, you know, some other bands or something like that? But they were into it, so that was kind of neat to see. I don't worry about that. I suppose there was a time, you know, because, you know, whenever you release a record, you think everybody should love this because you put your whole heart and soul into this.
Yeah. Right?
And you can't understand why the whole world doesn't recognize it. And from every artist that I've known and my own experience in the past, you're never satisfied. And I suppose that's a quality of an artist, is you're never satisfied with what you've done and you're never satisfied with the response to it. The trick is not to get too worried about the response to it.
Right.
You know, in other words, live to make more stuff later. Don't get obsessed. So we've gotten past the stage once again where we really worry about that, those terminologies. And those terminologies come from outside anyways. People ask you what your demographic is. I mean, the day that word got applied to music and I went, oh my God. You know, this is worse than the war in Iraq. This is bad news.
They've commoditized art.
Yeah. Or, you know, doing interviews, you know, when we first got signed, it's like, how many records do you think you'll sell? Well, what's that got? You know, when I was a fan of music, you know, in the 70s and stuff, no interview that I ever read with a band, because there was no videos back in those days, was about how many records do you think you'll sell, you know? Not that I remember. It was about, where were you coming from when you wrote this song, man?
That's right. You know? It was about the art.
Yeah.
Whether it was Cream magazine or Rolling Stone magazine.
Or who were your influences, which is still a question that you get asked. But it wasn't about, you know, the commercial success. And sort of, you know, that's probably what's happened, is the TV generation has sort of made celebrities out of people who play music. And the fact that they're celebrities supersedes what the music actually is a lot of the time.
Oh, sure. Yeah. You know, it's bigger than... Yeah.
But that didn't used to
backwards.
Be like that.
No.
It really didn't.
No.
So, whatever.
Yeah. No, it's... Well, it was a more audio world, right?
Yeah.
It was less about the visual. There were no such thing as music videos. And, you know, you could be a fan of a band for 10 years and before you saw them live. You know, just...
I mean, there's always been exceptions, I suppose, but... It, you know, the great thing, more so then when there's more room, more sort of psychological space for the music to hit somebody first, not what they look like or not what they acted like or anything like that, or the buzz. The great thing, though, I think, once again, with the internet and with sort of indie stuff happening through that medium, is that is returning. That the fact that the music can still connect and supersede all this overwhelming media is a good thing. It's restored in a lot of ways my faith in music. My kids are discovering bands all the time, and she's playing me stuff, and I'm like, that's pretty cool, you know. And I would have never known, you know, if they hadn't discovered it on the internet, right?
Well, let's ask a backwards question.
Shoot.
Has anyone approached you and said, hey, 5440 was a huge influence on me, your writing style was a huge influence on me, and has that surprised you?
Yeah, that's happened a few times. And it has kind of, you know, really? And you sort of lose that perspective that people take some of the stuff that you create and it influences them.
Right.
You know? I've purposefully created a position where I don't I try not to put my ego around what is created. I go, well, that's created and that is what it is. And if it helps somebody, whether it's the song they have at their wedding or whether it inspires them to pick up a guitar,
right?
You know, great. And I hope that it does that. But it's not me that did that for them. It's the song that did that for them. There's that distance.
Yeah.
And so, and I understand that. And it's the same with me. I mean, I'm a huge fan of, Neil Young, for instance. And for the longest time, I didn't even want to see him because I was afraid that it would distort my relationship with the music. It's like reading the book and then seeing the movie, you know,
right.
Being afraid to see the movie because I have my own vision of what this is about. Then I saw him a few times, but now I wouldn't want to meet him, you know, because then that might really distort my perception of what, you know, I have a relationship with the music. I don't care who he is.
Yeah, that's right.
I really don't. I just love what he does. So there's a difference.
Now, are you surprised where you're at? I mean, I get the impression that it's just, you know, if you live another day to write another song or put out another album, that's great. But do you ever sort of do a retrospective that, you know, we missed an opportunity here, or, you know, we really capitalized on an opportunity there? Looking back career path wise, is there anything you wish had gone differently or that you're really stunned by?
I don't know. I mean, you can do that. There's certainly a lot of roads that you look back and you go, well, I wonder if we'd have gone this way instead of that way. But then you just wouldn't know how the rest of that would follow, if you know what I'm saying.
Yeah,
would I have met my wife and then not had the children that I've had and all that sort of stuff? And, you know, would I trade that for, you know, having decided to stay in L.A., for instance, you know?
Yeah.
And, you know, gotten whatever, more notoriety. I don't know. Not too much that I can, you know. Yeah, you know, I mean, I think Paul Anka said it best, you know, regrets. I've had a few. But then again, too few to mention, right?
Sid Vicious said it best,
though. Yeah. Frank kind of delivered the ultimate.
I suppose, for some. So, put your sage hat on for artists starting out, you know, if they tugged on your shoulder and said, you know, I'm getting started and what should I do? What guidance would you give me? What would you say to them?
Well, you know, there's a thing that the philosophy in our band that when people ask us, you know, I'm thinking about getting in the music business or I'm thinking about this, you know, do you have any advice? And we always say, don't. Because if you have to think about whether you're going to do this or not, you are so behind.
Well, let's
it's
deal
an obsession.
With, yeah, let's deal with the person who already has the compulsion and they can't stop it. And they're just looking for, you know, where should I direct these energies and what's a waste of time and, you know, what do I do now?
Well, I think if I would assume it, therefore, that your drive is centered around the music.
Yeah.
And creating music. And so, you know, not that I want to duck the question, but there isn't really much specific to say other than the determination will get you there. I mean, I've seen a lot of people with great talent and with a road that's paved for them, and they just can't seem to walk on it because they don't seem to be able to stick with it.
Right.
You know, through the trials and tribulations and the distortions, and they lose sight of why they're doing it. these things will sort themselves out if you're sort of remember why you like music or why you want to do this in the first place. For us, it was never about a career. It was just about making the next record, creating the next thing and getting it out there and then doing it again. And it's still our philosophy. It's having the resources and the ability and the will to keep creating, you know. So
now, you talked about performing and the buzz it gives. Certainly, Vancouver's got to be a great place to play. I mean, where else is there that you just love to play, that you really get a good vibe with the audience?
Well, Buffalo's really good for us, actually.
No kidding.
Yeah, it's probably, it sometimes even outdoes Vancouver, believe it or not, which is an anomaly for us, but I don't know. It can be anywhere, actually. As far as a city goes, I wouldn't say anything other than Buffalo or Vancouver on a consistent level. But, you know, we could be in Regina one day and, you know, it's kind of a. And then another day, it's like one of the most magical moments. And I don't know why. I just don't know why.
Yeah.
It just seems to work. You know?
Same set list.
Yeah.
You know, largely, you know, some of the same crowd, but still a different experience.
And as a fan, you know, I remember years ago when we pulled up into Regina, we were going to play the university the next night, and playing there that night was a band called Slow.
Mm-hmm.
And there's probably 25 people in the crowd.
Yeah.
And it was probably one of the best shows I'd seen in my life. It still ranks up there.
No kidding.
I mean, they were just so, I don't know, they're just kind of defiant, and all they had was themselves and the music, you know.
Yeah.
Nobody cared. People were heckling them, and, you know.
No kidding.
We were sort of at the back watching this whole thing go down, and it was just magical. I mean, they were in touch with the gods, you know, and that's all. So you can't lose sight of that kind of stuff, too. It doesn't have to be a full house to be a great moment, right?
No, but, I mean, people think that way, right?
You know,
if there isn't a connection, if there isn't a relationship between the audience and the band, the music's going to suffer.
But well, there is anyways. That's the thing. These people have this sort of, you know, I'm more of a Zen attitude towards things. The is, you know. They're either what is, or there's, I mean, not. There's form and emptiness. And in any situation, when an artist is putting out there, even if it's a coffee house and no one is listening, it's still happening. They're still contributing to that moment. It's still something going on.
Yeah.
And there's somebody who's looking, or somebody whose ears, even if subconsciously, are getting a connection out of that. It works. The trick is, as the artist, not to run away from it, to stay there.
Right.
Yeah.
So talk a little bit about True North Records and your relationship with them and how that's working out for you.
It's working good. I mean, we started out, we did indie on our own label or a cooperative called Motomu.
Yeah.
Then we went to Warner's. Then we went to Sony. Then we did an indie thing again, and we just found we didn't have the energy to sort of wear all those hats.
Do all the work, right?
Yeah. You know. I was like, bleh. So we knew Bernie kind of, you know, through our manager and just known him over the years. And
yeah.
When True North was connected to Sony, met him and talked to him a few times and always had this very fondness of him. And, you know, when we decided we didn't really want to go indie again, mm-hmm. after that record, he says, I'll do it for you. So it's a nice family there. It's a small enough label. I think there's about 13 on the staff. And, you know, you can connect with anybody, and it's a good thing.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, you can virtually call and talk to whoever over there you need to talk to.
Exactly.
Whether it's, you know, publicity, or whether, you know, it's Bernie himself, he'll answer the phone. And
yeah, it's a boutique label that's been around since the 70s.
And yeah.
It's a nice fit, I think. I mean, maybe they're not, you know, they're more folky, I guess. That's what people is, you know, we're having to change some people's minds about what the label is defined as. But, you know, we're also changing our style and getting a little more, you know, I don't know, mellow?
Mellow.
Not, I wouldn't say mellow, but maybe. You know, we're not kids anymore.
No. So, and you don't try to, you know, compete with the, you know.
Can't do it. I don't understand it. I'd say it. I listen to this stuff. You know, I listen to some of these new bands, you know, and they're good at what they do. But it's sometimes, you know, it's like some of this modern rock stuff or the Simple Plan-y type bubblegum punk, I call it. They try to stick in 25 hooks into one song. I'm like, wow, like, let's just settle on a couple so we can all join you, you know?
Yeah, that's right.
But I guess the kids, you know, it's a hyper world out there. It's a fast-paced thing. I don't know. I'm more into a groove or a couple of hooks, and then that's your song, you know?
Yeah.
Very simple, very clean. And some of this stuff, they just try to throw these hooks out. You know, like 40 hooks in one song. It's like, man, where's the song here? It's like 40 ideas for a song in one song. But that's just me.
Yeah, spread it out.
Yeah, like you got a whole album in that one song, dude. You know?
Yeah, you left too much on the table.
Yeah.
Yeah, for the 99 cents you're going to get off of iTunes, you know, you just...
You could have turned that into some, more stuff.
More pocket change. Now, when you go to create a new record, I mean... You use other influences. You shamelessly draw upon other influences. You talked about sitting down for one album and listening to Cream and sort of late 60s stuff.
Yep.
And how that influenced that particular album. The Flatlands album, totally, it was, you know, thematic.
Yeah,
in the way you did it.
Yeah.
Someone on the way to the studio must have been listening to AC/DC before you recorded Yes to Everything.
Yeah.
Because you can hear some of those sounds, you know, in there.
For sure.
And is that typical? You go, okay, what's going on out there? What am I liking? And just sort of, okay, I'm going to take a little bit of this and a little bit of that. Or do songs sometimes come at you in their natural form, where you've got the whole structure to it and it's just a matter of marrying lyrics to it?
Sometimes that happens. Sometimes it's a case of, I'm just sitting there and a song just sort of pops out. You know, it's just usually what I do is I just follow the melody and the attitude, and, you know, the chords have to catch up to that. But making albums, we always, you know, it's a lot like maybe Greek mythology or something, where you invoke a certain muse. So sometimes, it's a muse of 60s kind of soul R&B inspired music, or, you know, for when the Trusted by Millions record, our muse was Lodger, Scary Monsters, and that other Bowie record, the Berlin Trilogy, whatever those ones were.
Heroes?
Yeah, maybe, I don't know. Anyway, we just sort of spawn those records all the time and, you know, listen to the riffs and try to half learn them and then apply them to what we were working on. And, you know, it didn't sound like that.
Yeah.
But it was just sort of, that was the overseer of what we were doing. We always pick an overseer. And what that does is it creates a nice limitation, you know, because to work within a limitation conceptually is a good idea. It's not a rule. It's just like an invoking a god that kind of, you know, I don't know, looks down on you, and it's a reference point. It's a bouncing back or a mirroring, right? Excuse that.
Yeah.
The thing that we're doing now with 100 songs, one of the reasons why we're doing 100 songs is because every record we have done some kind of a concept strategically or setting a limitation, but this is the concept in itself.
Mm-hmm.
When you say to yourself as a band, we're just going to write and record 100 songs, it's an open table. Anything can come out, right?
Right.
So, you know, it can be 30 seconds, it can be 10 minutes, it can be whatever, you know? So that's the beauty of that. It's very freeing, because I find when, having done 11 albums, as soon as you start to narrow in, you know, you notice that your perspective narrows as well. And I don't want that to happen now. Right. I like to create a song that's almost half done. It's always the music that I like the best.
Yeah.
When I'm creating and when I'm listening, you know, I like somebody just singing with a guitar because you can hear all this potential in it.
Yeah.
You know, and the listener wants to hear that too. I'm one of those people that doesn't like something that's overproduced and sounds like $1 million and all shiny. And there's no room for me. There's no room to relate to it.
We were talking about that earlier today.
Right.
Yeah.
So creating this thing where it's just sort of delivered and it's kind of raw and there's a lot of room for what it could be. I don't mean to make it bad, but it's almost better if it's bad than too good.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Yeah. Well,
because you lose the connection.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah.
And with 100 to do, you know, you're not going to overdo it. You'll get on to the next one. Yeah, that's good enough.
Yeah.
Next.
Got to move on.
37. Here we come.
That's right. Well, we're 24 done now. And we started at the beginning of October. So.
Looking back, I mean, it must be like children. It's very hard to pick favorites. But do you have a favorite album, a song you're most proud of, something that you go, wow, you know, if I died tomorrow, you know, thank God I got that out of my system. I presented it to the world.
Well, that happens from time to time. I mean, in the sense, the song called This Is Here, This Is Now, off the Yes to Everything, was a song that for a long time has been waiting to come out.
Mm-hmm.
And it came out. And it's just, you know, in my artistic attitude, it's like, that's it. That's what I've been trying to say. Whatever. It's, you know, then I can look at a song like I Go Blind and, you know, thank the Lord that my mortgage was paid from one song.
Yeah.
You know, done by Hootie. Even better.
Yeah.
Someone else does the work for you. You know, so... I gotta like that one, you know?
Yeah.
And then there's a song like One Gun that's inspired, you know, from meeting my wife and, you know, human rights and all those sort of things. So, you know, it's a sentimental favorite. Albums, same kind of thing. They represent different eras of our lives together as a band and just as people in the world, you know? It's like that was going on at that point in time. I kind of like the Small and Buddha Cabaret album. Consistently, it's up there for me.
Yeah.
A lot of the reason for that is it's very similar to what we're doing now in the sense that it was our demos. You know, we recorded that record really fast. In fact, the song Ocean Pearl, I'm calling out the arrangement to the band, and that's the take. You know, I'm going, G!
Yeah.
B, right? And then I went and sang it after.
Yeah.
We went to LA with Don Smith and tried to redo those demos. Spent over $200,000 US, which is unheard of these days, and it's unheard of now. I mean, we didn't have those budgets now, trust me, but in those days you did. And it just stunk. And so we were in the fortunate position with Sony at the time where we just had to hand in masters. Nobody from the record company listened or anything, so we did a double switch. we had the record from Don Smith that was all shiny and produced and icky,
yeah,
and lacked life, and we turned in our demos,
yeah,
to Sony. So here it is, and they said, "This is amazing. Don Smith did a great job," you know. So we actually ended up using a few of the songs that he did, but most of it, you know, Ocean Pearl and all the singles were our demos.
Oh, that's a cool story.
Yeah. And you got to be able... That was a big moment for us in recognizing what we liked about what we did. And that we fit more into the camp of, I guess, a Neil Young kind of, you know, just make it kind of down and dirty and ready rather than, you know, contrived or polished or whatever. So...
Yeah, it's, you know... The cutting edge of technology isn't always, its interests aren't always aligned with art.
Yeah.
Although there seems to be, you know, a school of thought anyway that is drawn to, you know, it's new, so let's employ it.
Yeah. Well, you know,
but it doesn't stand the test of time when you do that.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not a complete Luddite. I mean, I like working with the best quality people I can find, I like using the best gear I can find. I like taking advantage of whatever I can, you know, in terms of quality. And I'm certainly always going to not ignore, you know, what's offered. However, you can lose sight of what the root of what it is you're doing. In other words, the music, right?
Yeah.
You can, you know, realize into a recording project that you really haven't listened to it in an emotive way yet.
Mm-hmm.
And there's something wrong with that.
Some of your fans, very, very loyal fans. You've got a core group of fans who mm-hmm. would follow you to the end of the world. I don't know if that feels weird or whatever. I know this because I needed a couple of extra tickets for tonight's show, and I went to MySpace and I found someone who had some and just had a little MySpace conversation with them and their relationship. They were from Victoria. They couldn't make it to the show. They had other things, but I mean, they've been fans since high school, you know, and their kids, you know, they like your all ages show because they bring their kids, right?
Yeah.
I mean, that sort of, those could have been the kids at the front of the Commodore last
night.
Yeah,
I'm thinking that's, you're probably right.
Yeah. But I mean, just, you know, they'll buy every album. They'll see you whenever they can. And I mean, are you aware of that? Do you get approached all the time by people nervously saying, "You're my biggest fan"? I mean, I'm your biggest fan.
Yeah, and, yeah, I get a bit of that. The I'm your biggest fan, yeah, and stuff. You know, and I'm, whatever. And you know, we've taken not the most direct route, you know, creatively.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that if you know, I've begun to sort of accept the fact or recognize the fact that these people, I don't know, you know, I don't want to sound pretentious or anything like that, but if you're still a fan of our band after the sort of records that we've done over the years and today, I think you're with us. I think you get it.
Yeah.
You know, and not that you have to. Because, you know, we've sort of got fans, dropped fans, got new fans, you know, especially in the more popular years, right? The current radio song attracts people. Some yeah. people move on from that kind of thing. But those that have sort of ridden with us the whole way, I guess they appreciate something like we do, you know, that there's something, wherever this muse that we're tapping into, that's where they're, you know, Mount Olympus, that's where yeah. they're from, you know,
yeah,
like
right.
where we're from.
Yeah, they're touching.
Not necessarily us, but more the fact that we, whatever we tap into, that's what they're fans of.
Yeah, and they're touched by that. And
yeah, and I got to respect them for that, and I think it's great, you know, that they get it. Not that they get us, they just get where we're coming from, the place that we come from, not who we are, the place that musically where we come from. And that's an awesome feeling. It validates what we do.
Now, we were talking earlier about reading a book and not wanting to see the movie.
Yeah.
Well, let's talk about music videos.
Mm-hmm.
Do you do the creative on the music videos or leave that to somebody else? And how important do you think they are?
You know, this is because I've had a long career, you know. I don't necessarily think they're too important now, although... they've benefited our band, you know, quite a bit.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we, late 80s, early 90s, we were, you know, the video kings on Much Music. I think we got, Sheila won the best video 1 year, and we got routinely, you know, heavy rotations there for a few albums. And that really helped our careers.
Right.
So I can't ignore the fact that worked.
Right.
At the same time, you know, Much Music back in those days, I hate to say it, was a much cooler station in the sense that they would play what they liked, it seemed like, you know. And the Hip was another one, or whatever it was, you know, and it wasn't, you didn't have all the big sort of machinery from Los Angeles and New York invade, you know, you didn't have Beyonce making her presence known and, you know, shutting down the streets or whatever, whoever the, you know. It was all Canadian. It was,
well,
just folks, you know.
Mo Berg talks about walking down there with a cassette of, you know, I'm an adult now, right?
Yeah.
And thought maybe he'd get, you know, a feature, but it just went into regular rotation.
Yeah.
And he didn't have a record to support it, right?
Yeah.
There was a demand for the music. And yeah, they did just, hey, this is cool, let's do it. There was something fresh about it. Now it seems very corporate, doesn't it?
Well, yeah. I mean, but I think, once again, if you spin outside that sort of, you know, let's face it, Much Music has become corporate. If you spin outside of that, when you can go on the YouTubes or just have your own thing on a website, or like what Beck's doing, it's like, you know, buy the record and you get our cheap little interpretation of our song, whether, like you say, it's a sock or whatever.
Yeah.
I think that works. I think it's a good thing. People want to have that, you know, access and give it to them. So it's a creative medium, right? And I think it's nothing wrong with going lateral. If you're a musician, you don't have to stay true to it. You know, mm-hmm. you can do your cover, you can make your own video, and it's probably a good idea to get more involved. In our case, I have worked with directors and stuff like that, and I let them, because they know what they're doing. I really don't know anything about, you know, I can't sort of put it into a visual concept. I can, you put me on a, in a set or environment, and I can do what I do.
Yeah.
But, you know, I just make sure, I just do the checks and balances with their idea. It goes, yeah, that works with the song.
Yeah, that's right. You either go, that it's too cheese ball, or that's really cheesy. Let's do it. I like it.
Yeah. But, you know, it's like, I mean, I've been gone through a lot of these just because I've been around, I guess, around the block too many times. You know, don't use that word integrity anymore, you know, because if you're using the word, then you don't got it, you know.
Yeah, it's like someone says, let me be honest with you.
Yeah.
Well, and then you're going to doubt everything they've said.
Exactly, yeah. Which is, but at the same time, when you're starting out, you're trying to define yourself, and you're very protective of losing yourself. That, you know, the danger of that. So you do have to use those words, you know, that, you know, integrity or maturity and all those other things. And I think at the end of the day, you got to incorporate your shadow. And so whatever bugs you, you know, so if you would never do a silly video where you dress in a pink suit, you should, that should be what, exactly what you do once, you know.
Yeah.
Dress in the pink suit and do the stupid video. Get it out of your system and go there. Now you can't get hurt by it, you know. Now people can't find that weakness, or it's not going to dig at you. You're free, you know. So in that sense, you know, you just got to let it all happen.
Anything I've missed, or any burning questions you had? They thought, Joe, that's a stupid question. Ask this.
No, not really.
All good?
I'm good, yeah.
Okay, I'll wrap it up. Neil, thanks. You've been very generous with your time, and I really appreciate it, and I'm sure our listeners will. Looking forward to seeing your show tonight, and looking forward to your next 100 songs.
Well, thanks for having me.